Less than 4 months after it came into effect, Seattle is looking to adjust, as it's being described, the app-based worker minimum payment ordinance, calling on companies like Uber and DoorDash to improve labor conditions for employees. Seattle City Council President Sarah Nelson described the ordinance's impact on the local economy as catastrophic. The Seattle Times reports that the, quote, whiplash reversal comes as both drivers and businesses complained about the added cost of delivery, largely in the form of service charges added by the companies in the wake of the new law, close quote, in the wake of being the load-bearing language here. The story of a recent piece by our next guest is in its headline, DoorDash and Uber using customers as pawns to punish workers. Don't fall for it. So here to help us break down what's going on is Sally Dworak-Fisher, a senior staff attorney at the National Employment Law Project. She joins us now by phone from Baltimore City. Welcome to Counterspin, Sally Dworak-Fisher.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, though more and more people are taking on gig work for reasons largely to do with the conditions of non-gig work, I think it's still safe to say that more mainstream news media consumers use app-based delivery systems than work for them. And reporters know what they're doing when they explain this story by saying, for instance, companies like DoorDash have implemented regulatory fees in response to the new law, causing the cost of orders to go up. What's being skipped over in that formulation or that explanation of what's happening here, that there was a new law and now costs have gone up? What's missing there?
Sure. Well, you know, it's not a surprise that companies might choose to pass on some percentage of new costs to consumers, but they're by no means required to. And, you know, compliance with bedrock pay standards or any workplace law or social safety net is part of running a business. If you need to charge a certain amount so you can pay your employee a minimum wage, you don't normally issue a receipt that says this is due to the minimum wage law. You know, the practice of specifically pointing the finger at some new law seems really designed to make customers angry at the law and pit them against the workers. It's a business choice. It's not a requirement. And businesses could choose to, for instance, not pass on the entire cost of the law or not pass on any of it if they can afford to do that within their profit margin. So, you know, this particular situation where customers are getting receipts that, in effect, blame the law seems like a play to sort of pit workers and consumers against one another.
Absolutely. Well, in your piece that I saw on Common Dreams, you note that charging new service fees is an effort to tank consumer demand and available work. What are you getting at there? Why would a company want to draw down consumer demand? And then more specifically, why would they want to lessen available work?
My point there was just that in so doing, they can also, again, create an outcry, a backlash, mm-hmm. with workers themselves also saying, hey, the law isn't working as intended. We need to change it. But really, it's a manufactured crisis. And, you know, it's not the law that's to blame there. It's really the policy of the business that's to blame.
And we don't see media, at least that what I've seen, digging into that kind of elision, you know, that kind of skip.
Another interesting thing to note would be, like, so they add a $5 service fee or a $5 fee that's purportedly because of the new legal requirements. But, you know, it would be interesting to know how much of that fee from all those people is really going to the compliance versus how much is going to profit. And their data is not easily shared.
Well, and I wanted to ask you about that data. Companies are saying these new service charges are a counterbalance, a necessary counterbalance to increased labor costs, though, according to at least the Seattle Times, they have declined to release internal data. So we're being asked to trust the very companies that fought tooth and nail against this ordinance, against paying workers more. We're just supposed to trust their explanation of what the impact of that ordinance has been. That is, as you say, an information deficit there.
Yes, and I think that they closely guard their information and don't turn it over to policymakers. You know, it's sort of shadow boxing in a way, because they have all the information. So I would hope that policymakers would make them show their work, in effect.
Yeah, or at least make a point of the fact that they're not, you know, like that they're making assertions based on something that they're not proving or illustrating. We can call that out.
Yeah. Right. And that was part of our point, is that, you know, this law has only gone into effect 2 months ago. Just be cognizant of the fact that this is a choice that the companies are making to raise these service fees. And before you go about rushing to judgment on anything, demand the data and see what's going on.
When I spoke with Bama Threya, who hosts the podcast The Gig, she was saying that there's a glaring need for a bridge between labor rights advocates and digital rights advocates, because these companies are not, they're not making toasters, you know, their business model is crucial here. And part of that involves, in fact, data, and that there needs to be some kind of, beyond our regular understanding of workers' rights, there needs to be kind of a bigger picture understanding of this new way of doing business.
That sort of dovetails with something that we talk about frequently here, which is the algorithmic control and the gamification of the work.
Mm-hmm.
These corporations are really well-versed in touting flexibility, but the day-to-day job of an app-based worker is highly mediated, monitored, controlled by algorithms that detail how much they'll be paid, when they'll be paid, when they can work. Yeah, there's a whole lot of algorithms and tech that come into play here.
Mm-hmm.
But I do just want to say, like, it doesn't make them special. These are just new ways of misclassifying workers as independent contractors.
It's just a new shine on an old practice. Another thing that Bama Threya pointed out was that it's often presented to us as, well, I guess you're going to have to pay $26 for a cup of coffee because the workers want to get paid more. And that's the pitting workers versus consumers angle that a lot of elite media take. But also, if we look at other countries, you know, companies like Uber say, well, golly, if you make us improve our labor practices, I guess we'll have to, you know, and then they kick rocks and look sad. I guess we'll just have to go out of business. And then a government says, well, yeah, okay, but you still have to follow the law. And then they say, oh, all right, we'll just follow it. You know, you know, they can do it.
And I think they've admitted that. I believe that the Uber CEO, after California passed AB 5, which is a law regarding who's an employee and who's an independent contractor in that state, Uber, I'm pretty sure, was on record saying, well, we can comply with any law. And honestly, I think that really gets into, like, what do we as a society want in terms of our policies? Do we want just any business? Like, don't we have minimum wage laws for a reason? If you can't make it work while still paying a living wage, then consumers aren't in the business of subsidizing that. You know, I'm sorry, but, like, not every business is, like, entitled to run on the lowest wage possible.
And I wish a lot of the folks were not saying out of the same mouth, you know, that capitalism is this wonderful thing where if you build a better mousetrap, then you succeed. And if you don't, well, you don't. And that's why they have to be rewarded, because of the risk they take. When then at the same time we're saying, oh, but if you want to fall afoul of certain basic human rights laws, we'll subsidize that and make sure you get to exist anyway. Like, it's a confusing picture. Yeah,
I mean, should we bring back child labor?
Yeah. Well, you thought that would be a less interesting question than it turns out than it is. Well, let me just ask you finally, what should we be looking for to happen, you know, from public advocates, which we would hope elected officials would be public advocates, and also reporters we would hope would be public advocates? What should they be calling for and what should they notice if it doesn't happen? What's the right move right now?
I think whatever can be done to support the movement, there, you know, there's movements across states of app-based workers demanding accountability and really trying to shine a light on what's really going on here. I think the more reporting on that and exposing, you know, every worker should have flexibility and a good job. But the flexibility that's offered app-based workers is not necessarily the flexibility that a regular reader might assume. In 2018, NELP issued a report with another organization called Uber State Interference. And we really identified these ways that Uber and Lyft in particular, like, buy, bully, and bamboozle their way into getting legislatures to enact the policies that they favor. And now, coming out of the pandemic, as workers are successfully organizing again, like they've been doing in Seattle and New York City and Minneapolis, you know, the companies are orchestrating a backlash. So understanding the context of what's going on and exposing it would go a long way in solidarity with the workers.
We've been speaking with Sally Dworak-Fisher from the National Employment Law Project. They're online at NELP.org. And her piece, DoorDash and Uber Using Customers as Pawns to Punish Workers, Don't Fall for It, can be found at commondreams.org. Thank you so much, Sally Dworak-Fisher, for speaking with us this week on Counterspin.
A pleasure to be here. Thank you so much.